running around my head at the moment. I mean, just there are about five phrases that have come to my mind from that. From the three fantastic presentations given this morning. Actually, ripping up the script from the university somewhere along the line. That there is a feeling of going into the unknown. We don't know, none of us, I don't believe, are Cassandras. Maybe we are, but we don't really know what lays ahead of us. We can certainly look at the data that Kevin presented yesterday, and we can see situations that are very, very, very difficult and very, very hard. But there's a way of navigating that. Sustained anger also really captures my imagination as well. As does pragmatism, hard work, community, the recognition that we are all having to work together to collaborate on this as well, share resources. Architects, very much so. I think there still has been the case of vanity architecture projects that I think there's some great architects out there. Yes, we do have to subscribe to some building demands now. You can't now put up new houses without it meeting certain environmental credibility. I'm just talking about the buildings that you have, Erica, because obviously you've got a lot of cultural things going on. Actually, I want to backtrack a little bit to sort of 5 or 6 years ago when you came up to this area. Were there key individuals here who had been here for a while who just said, we've got to change? What was the meeting of minds there?
That's a very good question, quite a difficult question, but absolutely there were a number of individuals intent on collaborating further, and part of that came from having been involved in quite a step change in the way that this place thought about culture. Bidding for culture had brought people together, had brought quite a range of people who could invest in that project, and then had held them together rather unusually. Say, okay, so if that's not going to happen, then let's have all the benefits of that by staying together. And I'm thinking particularly about the way we approached our buildings, then that's more about individuals, if anything.
Yeah.
One or two key people, someone particularly in my building, probably you know, called Evan's Projector Operations, who has driven from the front the idea that we could work in a completely different way than we need to imagine. Working in a different way, in that sense of, I don't know if sustained anger describes him well, but sustained determination to be in front certainly describes him well. And he's not the only one, but obviously something that I know well. And I think, yeah, these things, echoing what Ben said, these things only happen. An individual say, come on, let's do it. And don't give up when everyone else says, really, you have to really keep going.
Do you think it's a kind of positive kind of contagiousness that's been happening?
Yes, oh yeah, undoubtedly, that you start to, well, this is personally, but I think the more you're involved with collaborative action about whatever particular endeavour, the more you trust. So one thing I didn't talk about is a slightly different kind of project, but I, on behalf of the 10 buildings, champion a group of marketing directors who are looking at engaging audiences in a different way. And it's taken us a really long time to believe that we can make change. But that doesn't mean that we haven't needed to meet and get to know one another for two or 3 years. And you start seeing small collaborations and you start to believe it's possible. I think it really takes time. But it isn't, in the end it's infectious, it's not about.
So is there a kind of osmosis that's happening between this city, this area, and other cities in the northeast or in the northwest? Is there something that's leaching out? Are you having other conversations, or are you having to very much build your resilience sort of from within and get it to a position of robustness before you feel that it can move beyond margins?
No, I don't think we feel that we're just thinking about this place, but actually as a group of cultural institutions, rather than talking on behalf of the whole community, I think we feel very strongly that the challenge for us is to make sure we share what we are learning and we share the benefits of what we're doing with as wide a population and artistic community and wider than that in this place.
Yeah.
We are, however, talking very much to Liverpool, who have had an interesting experience over the last 3 or 4 years because of 08 and how the cultural institutions come together around that. And yeah, there are some other examples around the country, and they are talking to one another. So it's kind of good.
Lucy, how many 19. And you've been living there for many, many years.
8 years I've been living there.
And what drew you up there?
I've been going there on holiday for a long time. Yes, we decided that we'd give it a go. People say, why did I move there? And it was just simply, why not? It's a fantastic place to live, and I've never regretted moving from what was a fantastic place I lived previously. But I get a huge amount of joy and satisfaction from living on it.
I thought it was interesting as well, we were saying that actually it's all types of people of very, very different political persuasions, that you can't just band everybody together as being eco-warriors or eco-warriors in that sense.
Yeah, it's a community that has always been a community there, clearly, because there's always a community where there are people. But it's become, people think of it as an intentional community because of the community buyout situation, because we own our own land. So I often get asked, you know, do you have to meet a committee? Do you have to have an interview to meet you? And the answer to that is no. But the only problem we have when people wanted to come and live on egg is places for them to live, they have a problem with housing. But it's just like anywhere else. But we can determine, possibly greater than most other people, what happens on our little patch of ground. So we don't have the same planning laws. Everything else is the same as where you live. But we have a much greater responsibility for literally for the land that we live on.
You know, Ben, I'd like to put a slide into your presentation. I was just thinking again, I mean, it is a particular artwork that really, really triggers my thinking, Dan's thinking, which is, I know I mentioned it briefly at the podium about voiced acorns, and Joseph Boyce planted 7,000 trees throughout the city of Kassel, and he was invited to do the inauguration of the 7th Documenta. Kassel is where Documenta happens every 7 years. And Joseph Boyce, who is one of the sort of most highly regarded artists in the 20th century, said, I don't want to be in the gallery space making the object. I don't want to be doing that. He'd already done a whole series of radical actions. He said, I want to be outside, and I want to be engaging with people, and I want to be engaging with problems. And he determined at that point that actually trees were a way of really bringing in life on a whole myriad of levels, and that they work four dimensionally as well. They worked in time. And if you think that one tree itself is kind of giving back enough oxygen for 10 people to live, you know, I see it's been a hugely generous artwork. And maybe a lot of people don't know that it's an artwork, but actually it's helping that whole city breathe. And now actually it's an incredible legacy that they have within that.
And so you're absolutely right that public art is the area perhaps that I should have mentioned. But I'm just personally, can I remember his name? There's a man, there's an artist who worked on the redevelopment of Glen Rothes back in the 60s. And Glen Rothes is changed, I think, by the fact that he designed the roundabouts or something. There's also, I mean, literally, he did a vast number of things. And
that's
well. And while I'm thinking that, there's also that extraordinary traffic planner who dedicates 2% of the land to the road space for bicycles every year, which is almost an artistic intervention, I think.
Yeah.
But I think David Harley did make quite a difference to the design of Glen Rothes in a way that seldom happens with public art. And public art is a tricky area because it's hard to sustain. It's a bit like the anger, but there are a number of problems associated with it, but there are some great things. I mean, I was thinking about the Angel of the North, of course, when I was planning my presentation, but I was wondering whether it's a change behaviour. That's what I, and can, in what way?
Well, I definitely shouldn't speak about the Angel of the North, but very personally, I'm certain that it's given a sense that you're arriving somewhere really special that feels private. And so I would argue that that's changed.
And has it changed the behaviour of, I mean, has it changed the performance in any way? Do you think are people more likely to engage in culture because of it, say, or what?
Well, to be kind of ruthlessly pragmatic, they might be more willing to support cultural investment, for instance. because there was huge scepticism about that theatre and the notion that that money is not well spent. So I would certainly think we could probably show some evidence that now if you propose a major artistic project, well, okay, it might be a benefit because we love the age of it. So yes, sure. And the fact that there are people there all the time, people from the region visiting it, it's a place that's loved. So that's definitely a change.
It's become very iconic, isn't it? It's a very, very iconic image of the Northeast, you know, the angel flashes up all the time on TV adverts at times as well. I also want to just get a little bit more provocative as well, and which is, you were saying about the audiences, recognising the way that audiences travel, but of course there is the fact that, you know, culture is highly international. People are flying all over to bring orchestras, to bring theatre companies, to bring, you know, the Furadil Bows. How are we approaching that? What all of this, it is so systemic, as you're saying. You know, you kind of get to a point and you feel inspired, and think, yeah, we're unraveling that, and suddenly you come up against another big thorny one. And also the other one I think that that Ben mentioned was how the sort of notion of prohibition and how behaviour changed and how smoking is no longer seen as being something that we value, and how there is no longer any tobacco sponsorship that happens in some institutions, but we have a very strong proliferation of oil sponsorship in lots of institutions. So I just want to throw a couple of those darts out to share as well, because I think we are the elephants in the room, and I think we have to have a shared embrace of the world for a shared discussion or argument, or however it goes. But you can pick up either.
Can I say a word about kind of travel of artists and tour?
Yes, do.
Because actually, my perception is that that's changing in a rather interesting way, and it's changing iteratively. 5 or 10 years ago, there was quite an awesome talk, which goes back to what you were saying about this sort of rather closed world that says, we've worked out that the world is ending and we must change everything we do. Everybody who's not in this domain is kind of sinful in some sense. And I think something rather brilliant is happening. That is dissolving. There is a sense that we've learned from asking the question, we've learned from addressing some of those anxieties. So we haven't abandoned international touring completely, for instance, in the performing arts, which is incredibly expensive in every sense. But we have started a whole range of different conversations. So live streaming is starting to be a really serious thing to do. It's happened for lots of reasons, but that is definitely one of them, that you don't need to do artists to work. And that if this is going to be part of our future, then let's invest in it and do it really well. And I think about Nettie Meyer and the Met experiment and so on, which is beginning, in my experience, to filter down to much smaller organisations that can go, actually, we can really do this. Mm. But also, I think the way we're thinking about collaboration and exchange of artists is changing. Instead of thinking we must bring our work and put it somewhere else, much, much more, my conversations I know across the world are about saying, let's two people, maybe four, have a really meaningful exchange, and then let's see what they make out of that. They might make two things in two different places, and they might travel quite a lot less, but they will be changed, exactly what you were talking about, actually, by working with one another. So I think it's changed quite a healthy way.
Judith Knight from Arts Admin was involved in a discussion about this last week, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
She may have something to say.
Go on. Well, Erica said it really. I think there is a change. I think certainly not very many years ago we were all rushing around touring, because certainly when
all the cheap flights came in, the big thing was international touring, because it was good for your profile and it was good for your bank balance, or you know, non-bank balance. But I think there's absolutely a real move to have more slower collaborative relationships. If you're invited to somewhere to stay longer, to do residences, and exactly as Erica said, you know, two artists working together. And I think it's a real move right across the arts thing, which is incredibly positive. So it's not stopping international working, but it is working in a very different way, a very more thoughtful way, and actually more a deeper engagement, which I think is good for lots of reasons, as well as the issue of climate change. So yeah, I think it's a positive move, but we have to speed it up, or speed that move up.